And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. The landmark Supreme Court case making same-sex marriage legal in the United States is the focus of one episode of the new Netflix documentary series Amend, an exploration of the 14th Amendment. And the plaintiff in that case, Jim Obergefell of Cincinnati, shares his story in the documentary along with his attorney, Al Gerhardstein. They both join us now via Zoom. Jim Obergefell, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Michael. Thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And Al Gerhardstein, welcome back to our show as well.
Well, I'm very glad to be here. Thank you, Michael.
We're glad to have you as well. We have a little clip from the trailer for this program that we'll play now.
What does it mean to be an American?
This land is your land.
What about a citizen?
This land is my land.
The original Constitution is silent on the subject of citizenship.
From California.
Doesn't have any statement of who is a citizen or who isn't.
In that space of this undefined term citizen, racism was allowed to flourish.
At the heart of the 14th Amendment is the definition of citizens in America. It is through this definition that all the rights we cherish are granted and defended. Racial equality.
Marriage equality.
Women's equal citizenship.
The right to have rights.
And under the law, everyone in America gets equal protection.
Was made for you and
me. You heard actor and hip-hop star Will Smith in that, comedian and host Larry Wilmore. They are executive producers of this program that debuted on Netflix back in February. There are multiple episodes involved exploring the 14th Amendment, and one of those episodes does feature the quest for same-sex marriage. And Jim and Al, what really struck me about this, I think when I clicked play on that, was to spend an hour in a deep dive on the legal question posed to the Supreme Court back in 2015. But this was a really interesting exploration of Cincinnati in the 1990s and the feelings that our neighbors had about gay people in that period. In fact, Will Smith says at one point early on in the episode that Cincinnati in the 1990s was a lot like Cincinnati in the 1950s. And Jim, I just want to start with you. You were, of course, here in the 1990s. Was that an accurate assessment?
Oh, that was absolutely accurate. And I also have to agree, Michael, I was surprised at how much focus, how much time that episode spent on Cincinnati, but I think they captured it pretty accurately. But I also have to say, I love that the Cincinnati of today is so vastly different from the Cincinnati of the 1990s, the 1950s, even 2000.
It was, they did include that, of course, in the episode as well to show that the city had changed and that there is a much more positive experience for LGBT citizens in the Queen City here. Al, I want to talk to you as well about that assessment from Will Smith. You're a civil rights attorney for a long time. You even mentioned in this particular episode that you suggest to, I guess, budding civil rights attorneys to go to the Midwest because they'll find a lot of work. And you referenced that we were still having Ku Klux Klan events in Cincinnati up until the 1990s. So share your thoughts on that assessment of maybe the stunted growth of the city at that time.
Well, we were slow to come around, and on gay rights, we were the most hostile place in America for gay people. We had passed in 1993 Article 12 to the Cincinnati Charter, which was a unique and a terrible charter amendment that denied to gay people expressly any effort to provide them protection against discrimination or to even advocate for that type of protection against discrimination under the charter. So we were really in the dark ages. And I think what was fascinating and effective about this series is that they took that episode in our lives, in Cincinnati's life, and applied it to what they were trying to achieve under the 14th Amendment. I sued to strike down Article 12. I won in the district court, lost in the Sixth Circuit, won once in the U.S. Supreme Court, but ultimately lost in the U.S. Supreme Court using litigation, using this very flexible amendment, the 14th Amendment, to try and keep that hostile charter amendment out of our lives in Cincinnati, ultimately failing. And so it took the people and the democratic process to repeal Article 12. And that story was told in this in this Netflix episode, it kind of walked us through how Cincinnati kind of woke up when I lost the case ultimately and said, my God, we got to live with this. And then they came to their senses and repealed it. But what's fascinating there, just one other point, is that the same year that Cincinnati repealed Article 12, Ohio passed the marriage ban. So it was quite fascinating.
Certainly. This episode explores a lot of different Supreme Court cases that have dealt with areas of life as gay people, from sex to relationships to basic civil rights at the city level. And then, of course, the response to advances and what it seemed to be gay advances in the media and in the public, that in 2004, there were a lot of anti-gay marriage ballot measures, including in Ohio and Kentucky, that were overwhelmingly approved by their voters. Al, you became emotional at one part in this documentary. It seemed that you were having difficulty even talking about it. I think this was involving your challenge to Issue 3, Article 12. And one of the judges, the federal judge in that case, had basically said that gay people are only identifiable by their behavior. And you wished you could go back and argue and turn around to that crowd, which you suggest was full of gay people, and ask the gay people to stand up. But you couldn't at that time just because of how scared they would have been.
Right. And you can't out people at a time when same-sex sexual behavior was still illegal under Bowers versus Hardwick. So it was a very frustrating case. It was a very frustrating loss. And I just felt like I was batting my head against a wall. And to relive that was emotional, especially when the consequences were that as a result, Article 12 was let stand and Cincinnati became this island of anti-gay bias. The most severe set of laws were here in Cincinnati, more so than any other place in the entire country.
We're talking with Al Gerhardstein, Cincinnati civil rights attorney, and Jim Obergefell, a plaintiff in that landmark Supreme Court decision that legalized same-sex marriage in the United States. And Jim, early on in the episode, you talk about, I shouldn't even say discovering your sexuality, because I think you reference that you don't know what these feelings meant at the time, but you would save male underwear models out of the catalogs in your family's house, ultimately burning them, I think, when you became more aware of what that meant. And here we are all these years later, and your name is attached to this landmark Supreme Court case. What are your feelings when you take a moment and think about your life's journey from frightened child, realizing what your sexuality is, to being a name associated with what granted this long-sought right to every gay person?
Michael, I think the word that comes to mind when I think about how my life has changed is just shock because of how much it has changed. You know, I think back to that memory that you referenced that's talked about in that episode about ripping out the pages of men's underwear from the Sears and Penney's catalogs. It amazes me how many times I've heard other gay men share that same memory from their childhood. And even though, you know, at the age of 8 or 9, I couldn't put words to why I wanted them, or why eventually it just felt so wrong that I had to burn them. That's an experience so many of us have had. And to go from that, this frightened child who didn't understand that, to moving to Cincinnati in the mid-80s for school and staying here and being in that city that, you know, was by far the most hostile to the LGBTQ plus community in the country, it's stunning to me that I eventually became the name and face, albeit one of more than 30. So it wasn't just John's in my story. There were so many other stories in this case. To becoming the name and face of marriage equality, it's hard to believe that that has happened. But I have to say, one of the most meaningful things for me is to know that I've helped play a part in creating a world where the younger generations actually are growing up in a better place than I did, than the people who came before me. You know, I always give credit to the many people, countless people older than I am who risked their lives and did all of the work that they did to help to create a world where John and I actually could get married, but then also seriously consider filing suit against the state of Ohio and the city of Cincinnati. So I feel like I'm just one small part of this amazing progress that our community has made. And more than anything, I just love that kids today can grow up knowing that they have the right to marry the person they love, whoever that person happens to be. I just love that I've helped make it a better place for them. And that makes everything that I've gone through worthwhile.
Your story has been told a lot in a variety of different media, and neither of you really is a stranger to media interviews. You've both been on this program before, and you've both written about your experiences, but Netflix has a pretty wide reach and an on-demand reach, so people can pull up this episode and watch it at will. Let's talk a little bit about how it came about. Jim, when were you contacted by the producers that say, you know, Will Smith and Larry Wilmore want to include your story as part of this really cool documentary series?
Right. So I actually first heard from the director of the series, Rob Imbriano, and I honestly don't remember how that introduction or how that connection was made, but he was the person who initially reached out and we started talking and he shared his ideas for the series. And at that point, it was not officially going to be a Netflix series. He was working on this documentary series that he was then hoping to sell to someone like Netflix. And that's eventually what happened. So he reached out, talked about it. And I said, well, this sounds great. And then he also asked if I thought Al, as well as John's Aunt Paulette, who married us, and John's brother might be interested as well in taking part. So then I was able to reach out to them and get them involved as well.
Al, talk a little bit about your experience making this. I just want to reiterate for our listeners that this is an episode that explores the same-sex marriage case through the lens of the 14th Amendment, through the series that explores the 14th Amendment. This is an extraordinarily Cincinnati-centric hour. So talk a little bit about, you know, how you were brought in and what the experience was like.
Well, it was just fascinating. You know, I've been a litigator for over 40 years. And I work with the 14th Amendment every day. I mean, that's my basic document that I rely on to assert rights on behalf of all my clients. So to hear that somebody was trying to translate these legal notions into digestible learning at this time when we needed civics lessons in our country was very exciting. This was actually taped, or my interview was taped 2 years ago. And I know they had spent a lot of time working on it, but I'm just so impressed by how they both stuck to the text and brought up the important legal rulings, but also told the stories of people behind the rulings so that you could see that our whole legal evolution and our moral evolution as we digest principles like due process and liberty are in part motivated by how compelling people's stories are. Frederick Douglass is featured through this whole six episodes, and he was such a compelling figure. And I think that's what makes Jim so compelling as well, because his story with John, you know, advocating for gay marriage while he's in grief. John died in October of 2013 in the middle of our litigation. It's just, you just have to take notice and you have to be inspired. And I have continued to be inspired by Jim and John.
Jim, this program notes that for you and John, your late husband, it was love at third sight, as you put it, after a couple of meetings where you had friendly conversation, but no date. It was finally a New Year's Eve party that John hosted where you say you never left after that. And you were together a long time. And he ultimately was diagnosed with ALS. And as Al just mentioned, did pass away. Your marriage was very unique because marriage, of course, was still not legal in Ohio. And your husband-to-be was hospitalized. And so there's this image of John's Aunt Paulette presiding over your marriage on an airplane with your husband in a bed and you next to him. And it was just striking to have that image again. So did you have any idea at that time that that moment, as challenging as it was to get married, not just legally, but logistically, that you would change the course of history?
We never had any dream that such a thing could happen. You know, when we decided to get married, it was because we finally had the opportunity to do that and to have at least the federal government acknowledge us and say, we see your marriage. And it was really something that we had talked about probably since the first year of our relationship. So for more than 20 years, we had talked about marriage and we could finally do it. And we simply wanted to get married and live out John's remaining days as husband and husband. That was really all we wanted. There was no thought of, no dream of filing a lawsuit or becoming the named plaintiff in a Supreme Court case. But when you have a chance to meet someone like Al, who is this amazing, dedicated civil rights attorney who did a simple thing, you know, he brought out a blank Ohio death certificate and he made that abstract Ohio marriage equality or same-sex marriage ban, he made that abstract thing real by telling us, guess what, guys, when John dies, his last official record as a person will be wrong. Well, that was one of those situations where we could have either said, well, you know, we're married and John's dying and we're just going to focus on that. Or we could actually do something about it. And Al made it okay to do something about it. He made us feel comfortable. And it was simply, I like to say, it was just part and parcel of John and I living up to our promises to each other to love, honor, and protect one another. So it was a very easy decision. But did I ever think from even from the start when we decided to file that I'd end up in the Supreme Court? No. But to be honest, I was so focused on John and our relationship that I really couldn't think beyond the walls of John's room in our place in Over the Rhine.
This marriage took place before, obviously, same-sex marriage was available and legal nationwide, but people probably remember that there were piecemeal approaches to this. Some states allowed it, others didn't, but regardless, if a state didn't allow it, did not have to recognize that you were married. So you flew to a state where you could be married, did the ceremony on an airplane, and came back. And as this documentary series notes, Al showed up with that death certificate, as you just referenced. And Al, you note that it's not something that you would typically do after a celebratory event like a wedding to show up with a death certificate. Obviously, John was very sick, and this was something that needed to be considered. And so Jim just said that the death certificate would be wrong, and it's because it would have said that John was unmarried. Why did you take action at this point? What opportunity did you see?
Well, one thing you learn as a litigator is when you have a compelling story, there's a way to get to the front of the line if there's an emergency. That's called a temporary restraining order. And I knew that if I invoked fundamental rights, our fundamental right to marry, our fundamental right to equal protection. And I have a person in need of action by the court right now because he's going to die any day. That'll be the basis for a prompt ruling by the court and a prompt movement by the state in addressing this injustice, this fact that gay people were not allowed to marry or even have their marriages recognized. So simply applying the law as I had used it on behalf of other marginalized people, I rushed to court. I think we were in court about 10 days after our meeting and secured the temporary restraining order from Judge Black.
You noted earlier, Al, that you had a string of defeats in gay-related legal challenges, and this was the biggest of wins. Where does this case rank in your long storied career? If you rank your successes, or where does this fit in your life when you think what your legacy might be?
Well, this is definitely very close to the top, one of the top few. And the most amazing thing about this case is the joy that, I mean, you hear about this case and you smile. I mean, what litigation brings a smile? I mean, usually it's, you know, some award of money or hopefully some reform like the collaborative or some other changes in the way power is brokered. But it's all pretty serious stuff, and it's all making the best out of a bad situation. This is making the best out of a great situation. People are in love. They get married. Now their marriages are recognized. And what do we have at the end of this case? What happened when Jim and I returned from Washington after the announcement of the decision? We had a parade. We were just gay pride day. So it was just a thrill. And it remains very special, not only for the significance, the nationwide ruling, but because of the joy that surrounds it.
Jim, in our last 30 seconds together, are you able to understand what this case has meant to others?
I think so, Michael. You know, even when it started and when I was so thinking about John and just the two of us, I knew it had the potential to be really big. But in the years since, the countless hundreds, if not thousands of people who have thanked me, who have hugged me, showed me photos, told me stories, that has made it clear to me just how big this is. And more than anything, it's just that knowledge that young kids today, especially LGBTQ plus kids, can look at this decision as well as other decisions that have moved us forward as the stepping stones to creating a world where they actually do matter, where they are part of We the People. And that's the best possible gift and thank you I can ever have.
Jim Obergefell and Al Gerritsen, thank you for the time you gave us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You can watch Amend on Netflix. They are featured in episode 5. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.